I know, they are comfy, these sofas, aren't they? So how are we all feeling?
All good.
Yeah? So I was saying to Denise, some days this feels like one of those soap operas, you know. So last week's episode we saw this, and it's a little bit like that, because I think it's good just to dwell on what we've looked at on the previous weeks. And last week we talked about resolve, and we talked about the effect of doubt on resolve, which is one of the hindrances. And it's worth, in our meditation today, even though we're introducing a new topic, to also keep that one in the background, because actually these two hindrances, doubt and what we're going to talk about today, disquiet, they do quite often go together as a bit of a double. Okay, so remember, all of these areas, they come from essentially what is an ancient text, the Abhidharma. It was written about 2,300 years ago, as far as we can tell. Huge text, all the different aspects of mental objects that we can have in our minds. So it's a real powerful text for explaining what happens in meditation, what can affect us, and so on. So disquiet, agitated state of mind, troubled, and because of that, it affects our meditation. What we're going to do today is have a look at disquiet. The way to deal with all of these things is to kind of step outside of them, to see them exactly for what they are, and to not get involved in the story that's behind the disquiet, if you like. This word disquiet, it's often translated as anxiety or worry, but actually that translation doesn't bring out the full breadth of what the word actually means. The Pali word kaukirtya, it kind of fuses both of these aspects, the anxiety and the worry, together. All disquiet, if we're going to make progress in our meditation, has to be investigated. It cannot be suppressed. Okay, that's really important. If we try and suppress disquiet, it'll lurk in the shadows. And actually, when we suppress it, it turns quite often into something else. It becomes cynicism, it becomes sloth, it becomes depression, self-hatred even, and oh. And the worst of these that it can become is the blaming of others. So often we can do that. So of course some of these fall into the category of ethics, and disquiet itself can fall into the category of ethics. So it can come from a place that's either driven by what we call skillful or unskillful behaviour in some way, shape or form. What? Somebody else?
Yes, Gwen, who's just come to us.
Hello, Gwen. Have a seat. The buzzer's just gone again, hon. Yeah. Sit yourself down, Gwen. Welcome. I won't start again. Just relax, Gwen. Who else is coming up? Hello, Liz. You all right? We're talking about disquiet, okay? One of the hindrances to effective meditation, and the nature of it, and how we can deal with it, actually. And what I was just explaining was this feeling of disquiet, anxiety, worry, It definitely gets in the way of our meditation. We cannot suppress it. We have to deal with it. We've got to look at it head on. So today's about how we do that. If we try and suppress it, it turns into something else. It becomes cynicism, depression, self-hatred, even the blaming of others. So it can lead to unskillful behaviour. It can be ethically neutral. Okay, so disquiet actually can be ethically neutral, and we'll see why with some examples. In terms of its effect on us, it can be either wholesome or unwholesome, depending on how we handle it. What we do with disquiet, it can actually have a wholesome effect. Okay, and this is sometimes surprising. When we see how disquiet can result in the blaming of others, we begin to understand why it can be unwholesome. So let's take an example. Imagine you've just had a heated exchange with somebody, okay? Now afterwards, perhaps in your meditation or when you're sitting down at your desk or wherever, you get a nagging feeling, a nagging unease. You're not entirely happy. Now, obviously, this could be simply that it's the effects of the heated exchange. But you just get the impression that there's more than just the after effects of the other person's rudeness. There's something else sitting under there. And thinking it over, you actually discover that the source of the nag is when you admit to yourself you spoke harshly or perhaps not quite truthfully in the heated exchange. Heated debate. And you actually realise that this is the source of your discomfort. That's where it is. And often we'll push away feelings of this type. But actually, this type of introspection is wholesome. That's a wholesome act. Okay? It's enabled us to actually see really, really clearly why and what the true nature of the situation is and our part in it. That in itself is a wholesome act. Yes, we might have put something that was less than skillful in the discussion, but the follow-up afterwards is actually wholesome. Okay? And it, of course, then gives us an opportunity to actually understand our contribution and potentially do something about it. Okay. So the mere act of investigating and understanding the feelings that are coming out of the exchange is karma. And the karma vipaka, the result that arises, is understanding. So already, just by spending that little bit of time looking at the situation, you've changed it. You've moved it forwards. Okay. We can, of course, take things further and reflect on the aspects of our own character and ingrained mental behaviour that make us act this way in the exchange. So there will be certain habits that we always drop into in these types of heated exchange that possibly lead us into unskillful behaviour. Again, the fact that we're starting to notice these mental habits is a positive thing. That's positive karma vipaka. We're really changing the situation now. When we conduct this type of introspection in our meditation, we must stay away from the story behind the exchange itself. It's very easy to get drawn in and have the same exchange again inside our own heads. When we do that, all we do is deepen those ruts. Yeah. Instead, what we're doing here is stepping back and looking at the ruts themselves and going, yeah, I always behave like that, actually. Is this making sense? Yeah. So, for those of you that perhaps have a Christian background, in a way, it's a little like confessional. Although no one else is involved, in order to make progress with this stuff, we have to be brutally self-honest. Remember, and this is a doozy, the power of remorse is directly proportional to our spiritual aspiration. I'll just drop that one in there. Power of remorse is directly proportional to our spiritual aspiration. This is not guilt. This is remorse. The two are different. Guilt burns us out from the ground up, and we tend that the nature of guilt tends to focus on the story. Remorse, we don't do that. We step back, we look at our behaviour, our impact in a dispassionate way. Okay? So actually, when we find aspects of our character that have contributed in this way, and they're perhaps less than skillful, we should actually celebrate. That's the difference between guilt and remorse. And we celebrate because we have uncovered something, and we can therefore do something about it. And this is extremely positive. Difficult to do, because one of our habits is to drop into the guilt thing. So, that's true disquiet, if you like. That is proper disquiet. That nagging feeling that we've potentially acted in some way that was unskillful. Oh yeah, there it is. That's what I did. Oops. Okay. What can I do to change it? But we also have something called false disquiet, and I've found this also in my practice. So false disquiet arises actually when there is no reason for remorse, but we still have it. For example, the withdrawal of someone's love, or perhaps the rejection by a group. Okay? When these things happen, we tend to ruminate on them and ask ourselves, why? That's disquiet too. And we go into that place. Most of these are often hard ingrained patterns of mental behaviour that were established in our childhood. You know, the classic kind of behaviours where perhaps you're not invited to the friend's party and all your friends were, and you sit there wondering why. As a kid, that kind of situation really drills in and has a big impact on us. Yeah. And the other one, of course, is the sports team. Why wasn't I picked? And these kind of get carried through into our adult life, whether we like it or not, they're there. The interesting thing, though, is that false disquiet can actually play in to truly moral situations. So sometimes this happens when we've really done something wrong, but the disquiet that arises actually comes from the fear of punishment rather than the real empathetic concern for those we've hurt. So we focus on what might happen to us rather than what we've done. And actually, in our modern world, the focus is more on the false disquiet here. So we're kind of encouraged to zero in on the false disquiet, to think about the consequences. Oh dear. Might get fined for that. Rather than, what we've actually done, the actual empathy instead. Imagine how different the world would be if everyone stopped focusing on the potential consequences and just focused on the empathetic quality of what they'd done. It'd be a very different world. Yeah. And actually, if we don't look this stuff in the eye, we can end up in a place of high insecurity, and potentially it can lead to neurosis because we worry so much about the consequences. So two types of disquiet so far, and they can get muddled together. But there's a third that I found in my exploration here, and we call this a functional disquiet. That's a classic one. It doesn't have any moral angle to it at all. And actually, it comes from our fallible human selves. So have you ever left the house and got halfway to work and thought, Did I actually lock the door? Classic. You spend all day at work. God, blimey, have I locked the door? I don't know. Yeah. Functional disquiet happens all the time. It helps protect us, actually. Better pop home and check. But if we let it develop, it can lead into anxiety or even full-blown OCD-like conditions. Okay, so all these things, if we don't keep them unchecked, they can really take us down. So three forms of disquiet here. We've got the ethical, the true disquiet, if you like. The false disquiet, it's not our fault, but our previous patterns of behaviour lead us into feeling like it is. And then we've got the functional. Damn, did I turn the gas off? So, you know, I said at the start, what's important with disquiet is actually to look at it, to investigate it. And these three areas, I think, well, I've certainly found, give a real good vehicle to do that when it arises in the mind. It gives you a model to be able to step outside and go, yeah, I can feel that nagging feeling in my body because that's where it starts. But what is it actually? Is it true? Is it false? Or is it just functional? And when we do this, it won't just evaporate overnight. You know, all this takes time, but we have to go into it. So actually, these three areas can get tangled together in quite complex situations. And what we have to do is try and distangle them. Some of them are definitely unskillful, but some of them are really, really complex. And they're perhaps even established in some of our aggressive or blame-based belief systems, which are clearly false in their nature. So the nature of our upbringing and the way we've been trained and taught contribute to these, which is tricky. I remember once I was on a train and I was feeling particularly mindful and meditative. And I sat there and noticed that over the course of the journey I'd had a number of different emotions arise. I'd had a bit of sadness, I'd had a bit of anger, I'd had a bit of joy. And I sat there and thought, where have these come from? And I replayed the journey and I realised that actually, at one point, I'd gone past some graffiti on a wall. Loads of graffiti. And that's, the anger had arisen. And when I looked at that, I thought, hang on a minute. Actually, that graffiti, it was quite nice. It was quite artistic, actually. So where did the anger come from? That was inbred, you know. I've been taught that graffiti is the wrong thing to do, so the anger arises. But whoever did it had done quite an artistic job. The sadness came from a huge, great power station in the middle of a beautiful green scene. And I'd looked at that and the sadness had arisen, but I turned the lights on every day, you know. Cook my food, and there's lots of people working damn hard in that power station. It's a tricky one. Stuff isn't easy. And the joy, of course, was a lovely field of cows. So it's really quite interesting to watch these things and ask where they come from, and actually, are these things genuinely your emotion, or have they been provided to you by society, by your life? Where do they come from? Yeah. So our meditation today, we can look at this. So we've now got two strong vehicles to work with when we sit. We can look at our progress in our meditation and ask ourselves, what's stopping me? What's stopping me from really letting go here and go into the breath? And if you look at it, you might find doubt and uncover doubt. You might find disquiet. You might find other things we haven't gone into yet. But those two could well be there. Okay. So we're going to use the mindfulness of breathing again. And then we're going to focus at the end just on the sensation of the breath at the very tip of the nose. Try and go into it as much as you can and let go. And when you find you can't, it could be just the distraction of the mind, which is fine. But there could be a bit of disquiet there. There could be doubt. So investigate it. Okay. Okay, just relaxing, settling down. We'll start with our little Buddhist chant. Namo Buddhaya, Namo Dhammaya, Namo Sanghaya, Namo Nama, Hum. Just tune into the room around you, feeling the space. Setting yourself a quiet, strong intent to remain with the practice. Just awareness of friends sitting with you, supporting each other. And we take our minds down into our feet. Feeling everything. All of the sensations there, both inside and on the surface. Really tuning in. Our entire body is a barometer of our emotions. Let's feel it all. Working up over the heel. And up through the ankle bones. As you travel through the body, just letting go. Feeling tension, easing it out. And up into the shins and the calf muscles. Working on up into the knees. Any aches and pains you feel, just try and sit with them a little. Don't push them away. Physical pain is an opportunity to practice for when we experience mental pain. We go into it in the same way, look at it. Try not to push it away. We work up along the thighs, the hamstrings, feeling the contact of our clothing, into the sitting bones, sinking into the seat. As we sink and settle, we allow the head to float up a little and experience a sense of strength coming into the posture and fresh intent coming into the mind to stay with the practice. Now we go into the stomach and heart area with disquiet. This is generally where it sits. So just take your time to investigate how that area feels. Can you feel any tension in the heart or in the stomach? Not trying to understand it at the moment, just feeling it. Gentle, compassionate awareness of how you're feeling. A sense of friendship towards whatever you find. And then we come up into the shoulders. And here, any tension we find, let it flow out. Let it melt. Take your awareness down your arms and into the hands and the fingers. Then we come back up to the head and just gently explore the scalp for sensations. Tiny, subtle tingling, firing of nerve endings, temperature, whatever you can find. In the face, gentle, compassionate smile behind the eyes, softening all the muscles in the face. We bring all of these different sensations in the body together, along with our emotions sitting in this space. An opportunity to really understand ourselves. And we can only do that in the moment. So we explore each moment with the breath. Anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing. Bring your awareness to the breath. Don't change it in any way. Just breathe. And feel where it's most obvious to you. In the stomach, back of the throat, the nose. And sit yourself there, and as you breathe, on each out-breath, hear the word peace. Settle in the mind and drop down into the body. Just the breath. Let it thoughts go. Peace. when the mind wanders, bring it back to the breath. Peace. Just the breath. Nothing else matters right now. Peace on each out-breath. letting the word go, but still with a focus on the breath, just become aware of the nature of your emotions in the heart and the stomach area. Notice tension there. The starting point here is to find the tension and relax it like a muscle relaxing. So if you find tension in the heart, allow it to open and melt and relax. Breathing gently, experiencing our emotions. Pure, uncovered observance of our emotions as they sit in our body. Don't think yet, don't justify, just notice. Relaxing any tension, any physical tension that you find there. take your awareness to the very tip of your nose where the breath enters and leaves. Center all of your concentration here. Just the breath now, nothing else matters. As you sit, just notice what hinders you from just letting go into the breath. Don't think about it. Just notice. Just the breath, letting go of everything else. Relaxing your concentration. Gently bring your mind back into the room. Feeling the space around you, feeling friends sitting with you. And here we can offer ourselves a silent resolution to take this practice out with us into our day. to continue to look gently for what inhibits us, to notice disquiet when it arises, gently, with compassion, investigate it. Like ripples in a pond, we make a difference. Om Mani Padme Hum. When you're ready, open your eyes.